And we're back.
Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your Starfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm Alexander Agunis, the Everyman Gamer, and tonight I'm joined by the most intrepid Starfinders this side of the galaxy.
Hi, I'm James. I wrote Code Switch.
And I'm Vanessa Hoskins.
And tonight we have two, count them, fantastic guests from all the way over on Starfinder Hill in the Star Chamber. Both Jasons, not one. We took both of them tonight. We have Jason Keeley and Jason Tondro. Gosh, I'm sorry, Jason Tondro. Someday, I swear, I'll learn how to say your name right on camera.
It's okay.
Double Jason, well, fantastic.
Yeah.
Go ahead, sorry.
I was saying, the very few Jasons in the company, if someone were to take out this podcast.
No, don't take it off, because as I'm sure many of our listeners know, you two together are like the juggernaut force behind pre-written adventures in the Starfinder product lines, right?
Yes, all everything that's not a scenario is us, essentially, yes. Adventure-wise.
Ooh, okay.
Excellent. And tonight I hear that we are exploring the vast grandness of the Starfinder adventures and what it means to have like modules and adventure paths. Is that correct?
Sure.
Yeah.
You're the host. You tell us what we're talking about.
Yeah, well, that's what we're talking about. I've decided. The course has been charted.
Okay.
Gavel.
I thought we were doing pop music of the vast. Is that not what we're doing?
No, if we were doing that, we would have had to have gotten thirsty. There's no way we could have gotten, like, we need strawberry machine cake. It's just,
well, that's not the best, though. I want to know what else is out there, you know?
Oh, Vanessa, you'll find out.
Oh, okay.
I'll do that as a teaser to something that I can't talk about.
That's right.
Oh, no. The secrets. Look,
but it's music related.
It's definitely music related.
Music.
You tease.
Hopefully you're going to love it.
But yeah, we aren't. It's really exciting, actually, because we know that the players of Starfinder and the GMs have been asking for self-contained modules or, you know, like one-shot adventures that aren't scenarios, society play, and that, you know, that would last like, you know, like three or four sessions, right? Like that kind of self-contained story where you can meet for more than one night in a row and play a self-contained story. And we're finally able to do that. Now, we had to wait a while because we needed to have room on the schedule. Mm-hmm. Like Keeley and I, we only have so many hours in the day. Our workload is on adventure paths all the time. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't until the adventure path line went bi-monthly that freed up time for us to start doing other kinds of adventures. And so that's when you get the modules and other stuff that we haven't been able to talk about yet.
And so that means that Starfinder is going to have a yearly adventure path and then six modules starting with this first one, right?
No, not necessarily.
Yeah.
Because adventure paths can be three or six or however you want them to be, right? So we might do a three-volume adventure path after Horizons of the Vast. And modules may not be the only thing we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. So you might not get six modules. You might
what else might you be doing then if it's not
it's hard to say. There's so many other things we could do, right? Like maybe we might do an adventure hardback, maybe we might do like other kinds of stuff, right? Now I'm neither confirming nor denying any of that stuff, but there's a lot of other cool ways that adventures are done that you would love to do.
So basically, you know, keep yourself tuned to the blog and whatnot. And when we finally are able to announce what's coming, what else is coming, what other fun surprises we have in store for you, which are going to be big.
Yeah.
Okay. Ooh. All right.
So what you're saying is that I should mark on my calendar to make sure that I send out another email to get you guys in the not so distant future.
Perhaps you might want to, you know, we can talk about
sometime between now and the gap, right?
Sometime between now and the gap. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Excellent. Well, why don't we talk about the things that we do know about right now, which is you guys have just announced that you're having your very first module in what you've said is not going to be the last one just now, right?
That's right. Yeah. Rob McCreary announced that we were doing a line, a module line. I think Keeley, how did the conversation about subscriptions finally fall out?
I'm not 100% sure. I don't think we know yet either.
Anyway, but yeah, there's going to be more than one module. It is modules, plural.
Very good.
And Keeley wrote the first one.
That's right, oh. I did. It's called Junker's Delight, which is always surprising to me that that title was accepted. It was sort of like I pitched the idea for it too when we were sort of talking about modules and what we want to do. Mm-hmm. And I pitched this idea as sort of it takes place on Akatan. It's about that, the reason it's got a lot of crash starships. There's lots of junk around. Let's talk about, you know, all the fun we can have with that kind of adventure. The title is, I just sort of like, not, it's not like a pun or anything, but it's just kind of a riff on the, just what was going through my head was the phrase Rapper's Delight. And then I just wrote Junker's Delight as a sort of stopgap title. Mm-hmm. But everyone's like, yeah, it's great. I love it. So I was like, okay, cool. It's not like, we can't, do these little, I mean, because it's not really an Easter egg, because it doesn't have anything to do with music. It mm-hmm. is just you end up, you're in Akatan and you get some missions and you go into these junkyards and do some wacky stuff. The thing that was kind of that came across was that we're expanding on this little tiny, basically junk tourism town called Kefak Depot. Mm-hmm. Which is sort of basically like saying Ratville or Roach Town, but it attracts a lot of tourism because there's, you go and it's basically like a living art installation or a museum where you can sort of look at that crash spaceship, look at all this pile of TVs, right? People want to, and maybe you'll find something, maybe you'll it's almost like junk prospecting, right? You can maybe find something that no one's found before. And as I was sort of writing stuff, thinking about it, it's funny because that name and that tiny paragraph that's in Packworld sort of describing this place was added kind of fairly last minute as a copy fit measure, right? We need a couple more lines. And I was like, I've got to come up with something. So Kefak Depot is sort of an idea of mine from way back. So I sort of think, well, once this is going to be what it's going to be about, hey, can I write it? Basically writing the adventure talking to getting another author, one who hasn't done at least not much for Starfinder, for Pathfinder, Misha Buschjäger, who's basically writing the gazetteer of this weird little town that's sort of in the middle of it, not quite in the middle of a junkyard, but on the edge of a junkyard that is just massive because in the course of the adventure, you go to like two or three different places that are sort of attached to this sort of junk tourism trade.
So you mentioned that this was like what did you say? Cafe Depot is what it was. What does that mean? Kefak. What does that mean?
A Kefak is an alien. I believe it's in Alien Archive 2. Is that right, Jake? It's basically this little crustacean-y crab thing that eats trash. It's a trash eating bug.
I love it.
So it is, and it kind of has an almost almost lobstery kind of look to it. Again, so that's why it's sort of like I don't know as why. Decide why would you name your town after a trash eating bug that vermin essentially, right? Is something that's, I don't know if we get into that or not.
It'd be like it'd be like Americans being called Yankees by the Brits, early on. We're like, yeah, okay, fine, we're Yankees. You know what? What of it? So it's like someone made fun of their town and they're like, all right, whatever. We'll just, we'll take it. That's fine.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
I kind of stand trash bugs. I get that.
the setting of the adventure, so I think I mentioned once on the last time I was on that amongst the Adventure Path team, which is just Keely, myself, and Rob, we had like this list of unused Adventure Path ideas, right? Mm-hmm. Like of that we go to whenever we're like, okay, well, what do we want to do for the next Adventure Path? Well, let's hit the list, right? Well, one of those entries is the Junk Lords of Akatan. And we don't know what this Adventure Path is. It sounds kind of like Mad Max-ish, like you're on Akatan, like fighting junk cars around and stuff. Mm-hmm. This adventure is not the Junk Lords of Akatan, but it probably is as close as we're going to get for a while.
Yeah. It pairs that sort of that grand sounding idea. It pairs it down because it is an adventure for first level characters, and the way we worked on it is we want this to be sort of the every definition of a standalone module. So it is for beginner GMs and for beginner players.
That's right.
And one thing we haven't really talked about too much is that when you grab it, if you go to buy this module, you don't actually need Alien Archive. You just need the core rulebook of this module, and you can run a game.
If you're going to the hobby counter and you've got your Starfinder book and you're like, what else do I need? The only thing you need is the adventure.
Yeah.
Right. So we've got all the stat blocks in there, and it doesn't use it doesn't use any other outside optional rules. There's nothing from Starship Operations Manual in it. There's none of that, no weapons from Armory. Yeah. Right. So it's totally self-contained, and it takes you up through level 4, I think, right?
That's right, right. So a little longer than a single volume on Adventure Path, but that's because we had more room to devote to the adventure itself. Lots of sidebars that are like, radiation comes into play here. This is the important things you need to know about radiation.
That's right. We're emphasizing that new GM experience too. So for example, when the players level up for the first time, there's a little sidebar helping the GM. Okay, here's how to help your players level up. Here's questions they might ask, or when they don't know what to do, here's some things to maybe help them out with or suggest, right? And here's how long it might take. And if you're at this spot in the adventure, maybe you can do it in between sessions. But if you have some time left over, maybe just take some time in the session to do it together, right? There's a lot of kind of hand holding for new GMs through this adventure.
Do you two anticipate that every adventure in this modules line is going to be like this, or is this one special because it's the first?
It's special because it's the first. We wanted to sort of make this sort of hopefully always in print module to be for anyone who's coming to Starfinder for the first time.
Now, with some exceptions, because for example, once you've done that for the first couple of levels, I don't really feel like we need to hold your hand anymore for stuff you've already done, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if we do a future module that introduces some new mechanic, right, like let's just say, for example, there are no vehicle chases in Junkers to Light. I'm not saying there are or there aren't, but for example, so then if we include a second adventure that's got a vehicle chase in it, we might presume that's the first time the GM has ever had to run one. So we might include a few tips and advice on that. Right.
Cool.
Yeah.
As somebody who heavily used the original Pathfinder module line, having all the stat blocks there is it's so helpful. I love it so much. Instead of having to stop everything to go back.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean that there isn't anything new in this module.
Right.
It introduces a couple new creatures.
Yep.
As a matter of fact, I don't know if we have that. Want to show that cover that we have?
Sure.
That creature the
on
cover.
The cover is that Obaziah is about to murder. Clearly, is a junk golem. So, which is not something we have in Starfinder yet, so throw the rules in for junk golems there. A couple new other sort of weird and interesting creatures, as well as player options. We decided we wanted to throw in some, since the theme of this adventure is junk, and the fact that we have introduced a couple of spells. Yeah, there's some spells in the core rulebook that have the word junk in the title, all the junk bots, right?
Yeah.
But then we went on ahead and did the junk sword and junk armor and some other ones I think that are in near space. Again, Jake's developing it currently, so whether or not all this stuff stays is one thing question. But I, you know, we sort of reprinted some of those. I wrote a couple new ones, and then we tied it all together with a Junkmancer archetype. So if you want to be a spellcaster who focuses completely on these weird junk spells,
and that is entirely my fault. I went to Keely and I said, look, you got to give me a Junkomancer. I'm sorry. And he was like, are you sure? It's kind of weird. And I'm like, okay, Junkomancer or death. Like, you have to give me.
You can't do this adventure without the Junkmancer.
Yeah, you cannot. Where else could the Junkomancer possibly appear but in the adventure called Junker's Delight? Like, this is it. Uh-huh.
Right. So that archetype sounds like total garbage to me.
Just trash.
Just trash.
It's just rubbish. Yeah, you're right.
Question: as someone who wrote the original junk sword and junk armor spells, does that archetype play with those? Because I would love to see my babies get put into an archetype. That's my first question.
Yes. It sort of works is that basically you focus on these types of spells with the word junk in the name or spells.
Mm-hmm.
I
think we did like a specialization in the old days, right? Where you get an extra junk spell,
Nice.
Right. Absolutely. So if you you learn an additional junk spell. Mm-hmm. You can cast an additional junk spell per day. It's kind of part of your archetype, right? So which also helps address the fact that I think Starfinder spellcasters maybe need a little bit more spells. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy to give them one as part of the archetype.
Throw it on them. So speaking of that, archetypes in Starfinder typically apply to all classes. Is this archetype going to be Technomancer exclusive, or can I be a junk mystic or a junk witch warper or, oh gosh, a junk precog in the not so distant future?
It is a spellcaster focused archetype, but it doesn't limit you to being a Technomancer.
Ah, cool. So if I want to make Dustin's mystic into a trash Kitsune, I can do it with this archetype. Got it.
Imagine if we created another class somewhere down the road that gave you access to those Junkmancer spells, those junk spells, right? Mm. Like, what matters is that you have the junk spells. It doesn't matter that you're a Technomancer per se.
Gotcha. So you need to already have the spells in order to get it. That's cool. I like this idea that players might want to pick up this book if only to have access to a dare I say it, trashy archetype.
Well, you know, one of the things that I wanted to make sure about this adventure is that there's actually something unique and cool in it. So that if you play through the adventure, maybe you get some cool new treasure. And there's some great unique treasure. Oh, yeah. That's kind of like trophy items that you come out with at the end of this adventure. And I just because it's a new adventure and self-contained and for first level characters doesn't mean it can't be cool. In fact, I want it to be like a little bit of bragging right. Like, hey, I've got that cool gizmo that you can only get in this adventure. And so we wanted to have some unique rewards in there too.
Yeah,
that's cool.
I'm sorry, I'm not laughing at what you're saying. James is telling our audience in chat that his Danny DeVito Halfling Trash Master is coming back.
The reason why I wanted the Junkomancer in this is because I want to play one. Like that's not a mystery. Like,
that's the best way to build any player options is what do I want to play? All right, let's write it, because that's always going to be the most fun.
There's two best things about doing what Keely and I do. The first part is seeing people play our adventures, which is the best thing in the world. But the second part is I get to make up the shit that I want to play.
I love that. As someone who heavily worked on COM, I love that. I feel that.
I think the module, I really am thankful for the idea of it, because getting people into Starfinder has been either people are really into it or kind of on the fence, and the commitment to an adventure path is a little much, but the beginner's box is a little hand-holding for RPG veterans.
Well, this is exactly why Against the Aeon Throne is the most played adventure path, right? Which we know. And that's because it's short. It's shorter. It's only 3 volumes. Mm-hmm. It's in print, unlike the first volume of Dead Sons. Mm-hmm. And it's first level, right?
Yep. Yeah.
So let's do that, except make it a one adventure.
You only have to buy one thing. Yep.
Yeah. So for clarity with that statement, that's a really interesting one. We don't really often hear about like how different volumes are doing.
Yeah.
Are you saying that it's the whole adventure path that it's the most popular, or the first book of Aeon Throne?
We asked our players, and we did some survey data, and I don't have the details on me, so I can't
talk
to all of them. But we asked them, which adventure paths have you played?
Mm-hmm.
And the most popular answer was Against the Aeon Throne.
Interesting. Huh. Okay. Interesting. I can see that.
And when you think, and I really think that when you look at it, it makes obvious sense why.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, because Pathfinder.
It's the shortest commitment, it's first level, and it's in print. Mm. And what that tells me is we need to do more first level, 3 volume adventure paths.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think a module is a good place to start, though. Like you were saying, it's about the size of one AP book, maybe a little longer. And so it really gets a group that's like, hey, we just want to sort of play around with this to just give them a chance to sink their teeth in really quick.
And also modules give us a chance to make very different adventures every time. Yeah. So if this one is like stuck on Akaton for most of the time, and, you know, maybe there's not a lot of starship stuff going on in it. Well, starships are a whole subsystem that might be a little bit too much for new players to really get into, you know, like that's kind of a whole nother game almost.
Yeah.
And so why don't we save that for another one, and we can make that one maybe more starship focused, right? And so you're in space a lot, and it becomes a very different kind of adventure with a different theme and a different feel to it. And we can keep doing this. We can keep, like, let's, so for example, like we've got this new mech system that we're doing for, you know, for the book. We did all this playtesting. We've got all this feedback on it, and it's gone through all these changes, and it's about to roll out. Well, we might not want to do a 6-volume adventure path with mechs, but we can sure as hell do a one shot module with mechs, right? So it gives us a chance to put all these different kinds of gaming. Because Starfinder is such a huge setting that embraces so many different kinds of genres, whether it's horror or mystery or exploration like Star Trek or space opera like Star Wars or, you know, gritty bounty hunting or whatever. Like there's so many different kinds of play. That we can do like one adventure a piece for all these different kinds of play.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of nice. Like you were saying, so many people have different character concepts they want to try out. And this one, if you know it's only 4 levels, it's like if you have a throwaway concept, you know, you can try it out. And if it's utter trash, that's fine. You know?
That is what you intended. If you're
you want to play this, your Junkomancer, though, yeah, until you get to whatever, level 14 or 16, when you turn yourself into junk.
I can just...
That's, you know, you want to keep playing for the hopefully.
What if I'm already junk?
Yeah, don't we all become junk at some point?
Oh, you're talking about if you were like an SRO, Johnny Five, pulled out of the garbage kind of
philosophically speaking. We're all
that's cool, though.
I am basically a sentient pie of AOL CDs.
We need that as a god where like everybody becomes trash at some point in their lifetime. And like, that's the god. You are all destined to join me in the eternal heap. Enjoy.
We really need the god of junk at some point.
Great trash heap.
Oh my goodness. I don't know. A lot of these ideas are garbage.
No, they're amazing.
Speaking of which, real quick, Mind Blown in chat suggests that maybe you can store junk in a pocket dimension to pull out later and call it junk in the trunk.
Okay, so I have to, might as well, I'm gonna pull back the curtain a little bit too for this, and yes. Jake, you should know that I did cut it after the milestone, but
I know you told me on Twitter
I had to say, yes indeed, oh sorry, I mentioned this on Twitter, I had to cut a whole sequence where there is an extended junk in the trunk joke in Junker's Delight, because it was too silly. It was
however if I can do a version of Laomen's secret chest called yes. Junk in the Trunk, I will do it.
Okay.
Amazing. I love it. I am not necessarily the perfect representation of your target data, but let me tell you that one of the things that keeps me super interested in Starfinder is the fact that like it's so zany and it is so like over the, like, I mean, yeah, you could play horror. We've been doing Signal of Screams, but yeah, like it as like a core concept, it just has the capacity to be so much funnier than almost any other like adventure or like gaming RPG out there. Like I crave the silly, please give me more. Junk in the Trunk would only make me like this game more personally.
Well, in point of fact though, we do kind of have to watch it, right? Like it can be gonzo in the sense that it can be fantastic and amazing. And I mean fantastic like in the literal sense, like you know, it's like eye pop, it blows your mind because something is so incredible. Mm-hmm. That's good, but I think we generally try to avoid outright humor, right? Because we don't want to be writing teenagers from outer space. That's not our game. Whoops. And well, you know,
we're right. You do whatever you want with Starfinder.
That's fair.
The fact that it has the space for you to be, you know, a reality TV show star going on adventures or getting trapped into, you know, a horror element, right?
Yeah,
makes the game. I think what makes the game appealing, makes the setting appealing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. But we can't always support all of those kinds of play, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so we can give you Zoe, and we can give you some elements that are wacky or a little bit over the top. But
we have to be the Leslie Nielsen of the airplane
movie. We do. Exactly. Right?
We have to come in and open the door and say, you know, good luck, we're all counting on you, and then close the door again while you're just sweating bullets and trying to land the plane and right, splashing yourself with alcohol, right? Yeah. We give you the opportunity to be that weirdness, be that goofiness if you want.
Yeah.
That being said, we know, Jake, we do have 3 Skittermander adventures which do sort of lean into the comedy a little bit.
Alex, your observation, like, you love that and you want to, that's good. That's a healthy sign for me, because that means that people can play in their own games a lot of the stuff that maybe official Paizo can't, you know, is probably not going to be able to publish. Right. Mm-hmm. But that's good. That means there's the community is very vibrant and it's doing what it wants to with the game, which is great. Yeah. We're giving you the tools and you're doing the game you want to play.
Definitely.
Anime,
totally mine.
There was a question from Lava being in chat about maybe having this adventure for organized play. Would that be something to consider?
Do you mean it being sanctioned for organized play? That's actually going to be, you know, up to the team, that other team. But when have we not sanctioned something like this?
Right.
You know, kind of. I'm fairly certain the plan would be to have that.
Yeah, it came up when we were planning the module line and in other things that are coming up. And Jenny, of course, is running the Starfinder Society organized play stuff right now. And she and we, Keely and I, we all talk a lot, and we want this stuff to get approved for society play as quickly as possible.
Okay, great.
Excellent. I'm hoping for something like Ire of the Storm, where it's like it's one book, but it's actually like three separate things. We'll see what happens, but
keep that idea, because there's something like that maybe that we've talked about.
Oh,
not necessarily for Junkers Delight down the road, but I hear you, and I'd like to see that too.
Oh, good. That's good, because James, what was the name of the one we did so much in PF1? It was the one that's in like the little town in Isgur.
Gallows.
Gallows of Madness. That one was good.
I could probably run that one from memory.
I know, that's right. We ran it so many times. It was so good.
But that sounds great.
We've talked a lot about the upcoming Adventures line, but there's something else on the horizon that, like, literally everybody's been talking about. It's like a really vast project that you guys have been working on. I feel like we're just going to have to really sink our teeth into that one, right? We're going to have to talk about the Galaxy Exploration Manual.
You're tricky.
No, go ahead. Go ahead with Horizons of the Vast.
Yeah, so Horizons of the Vast is the AP that's going to be following up Fly Free or Die, and will be the first one that will go back to that bi-monthly schedule. We've already announced the first volume, which is... So to take a step back, Horizons of the Vast is our sort of, to put it just bluntly, is our sort of Kingmaker in space situation, right? The players are sort of put in charge, administrators of what we're calling a charter on this new seemingly untouched planet, where there's lots of good resources, and they're given a really choice piece of land to sort of explore and expand as they see fit. Mm-hmm. So, of course, things are going to go horribly wrong. We'll find out. But hopefully they'll save the day. But at the end, they should also have themselves essentially a nation on this new planet. The first volume is called Planetfall. It's, of course, by the workhorse Ron Lundeen. And it just sort of takes place, you get there, you land, you start putting up prefab buildings, do the whole settlement situation, deal with all the problems, start exploring. It uses a hex grid sort of exploration. That exploration subsystem is in Galaxy Exploration Manual, but we're sort of reprinting the salient points in this volume as well, because they kind of come out at about the same time. Mm-hmm. While you're doing all that, we have, of course, our what we're calling the Charter Development System, which is our kingdom building, basically, right? Mm-hmm. Where you make choices, try to build up your resources, decide what you want to build, if you want to start another city, if you want to build a lumber mill or a mine or eventually, space elevator, how that affects all of your stuff. And then, of course, there's some mysteries that you need to have. You land on this planet, you find out maybe something's going on here that's weird. There are some cool new, sort of wacky animals. That some of them you'll have to fight, some of them you'll have to, you'll get to love and know. Weird plant life and doing all this good science. And then sort of eventually coming to terms with the fact that, you're also one of seven or eight other charters on this planet. So there's a number of other factions, basically, who you're going to be talking to. You might clash here and there. You might have to make some decisions. Do you want to, like, you find something interesting? Do you want to, this charter is offering to buy it from you. Do you want to just take the money, or do you want to keep it for yourself to sort of help with your research, help expand your charter, all that kind of stuff. And eventually, you know, things are going to get nasty. second volume, it's not all we talked about. Basically, haven't given out any of the titles, other titles yet. But in general, it is your sort of standard 6-volume adventure path for Starfinder. It's going to go from levels 1 to level 13. We'll have some, we're changing up a little bit of the format in the back a little bit. You'll see it's nothing so radical, but we're sort of moving a little closer to how Pathfinder does their adventure paths. Sort of, there will be, you know, articles in the back and mantras in the back and player options in the back, everything you come to love from adventure path volumes, right? But we sort of reorganize them a little bit differently.
Oh, so you got like the chapter thing, like in the new PF2 ones, where it's like chapter one.
It's not quite as grandiose as chapter one, but basically, sort of, we're taking the adventure toolbox idea and sort of because in the past, when we wanted to have like, we want to give you some player options for, you know, let's say if you wanted to get, I'm just gonna spill some meats. Say you wanted like, I like the cycle a whole lot, right? I'm a Kasothan Solarian, and my philosophy is a cycle. Maybe I want to get some player options in that sense, right? So, if we wanted that, we'd have to create a whole article. But now we can kind of like throw in like a spread that's just player options for that very specific thing, and not necessarily have to write the whole, you know, have a whole thing. And then we can throw in lots of more different things in that sense. But going back to the titles, the second volume was basically, the product page went up last night. It's called Serpents in the Cradle, and that one's by Hillary Moon Murphy.
Yeah, she's in the chat, and she's very excited about it.
Yeah, hi, Hillary. This one, possibly you can tell from the title, has a little bit of Aspis Consortium shenanigans going on.
Oh, really, huh?
Yeah.
Let me jump in there for a minute, because, you know, we talked a lot about the Aspis Consortium, and I almost used them as the bad guys in Fly Free or Die.
Right.
But I didn't, because to me, like, Aspis Consortium has just been the punching bag of the Pathfinder Society for the last 15 years, right? Mm. And so I didn't really see them as a credible threat. They're kind of like the galaxy's losers to me.
Oh.
So then Rob said, well, they shouldn't be like that. And I'm like, you know what? You're right. They shouldn't. And so we picked them to use them here so that we could put in an article about them. And I got John Compton to write it, who knows the Aspis Consortium better than anybody.
Sure.
And we're going to update them for the Starfinder setting in a way that makes them a real credible threat again, makes them new and interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really glad that we get a chance to do this and kind of rehabilitate the Aspis Consortium. So they're still an interesting adversary, but they occupy a different kind of place in Starfinder than they do in Pathfinder. Because in Starfinder, they're not the rivals. They're not they're not the arch enemies of the Starfinder Society in the way that they were in Pathfinder Society. So, mm-hmm. so I'm looking forward to getting that out there and kind of showing us a new way to reinterpret the Aspis Consortium.
I just want to say that I think it's really funny that, like, whenever a topic has to jump between the two product lines, so far it's been John Compton every time who writes that article, because
thirsty.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking of how in Age of Ashes, there's an entire article on witch weirds.
Oh yeah,
and he wrote that one. And I looked at it. I was like, Compton.
Well, I would have been remiss if I had not asked Compton to write it. Right?
Like, he makes perfect sense.
Now, to be fair, he's really busy, so he had to think twice about it. He was like, I don't know if I can. I got a lot on my plate right now. But he thought about it for about a day, and then he was like, yeah, I'll do it. And I was like, great, good.
Amazing. So I think this is really interesting, because the core rulebook doesn't even necessarily paint the Aspis Consortium as villains in Starfinder. Like, they're there.
They're a company, because they're called a consortium, right? Like, they're a merchant group of some kind.
Right.
And they're described as pretty shady, right? Like, they kind of blackmailed and kind of manipulated their way into a really good position through kind of shady, underhanded dealings.
But so, like, standard corporation.
Yeah, what they did a very good thing in the sense of bringing the Pack Worlds and the Vescarium together to help
fight
the Swarm. They sort of helped broker that deal, which got them this sort of cachet to be able to do all of their shady backroom dealings.
They kind of cut their own side deal, right? So they're kind of like almost like an independent nation. So I'm interested to see how it all turns out.
I'm just so interested in it because, like, it just the way that they're the way that the Starfinder Society is introduced in like its backstory, both in season one and in the core rulebook, where like I think it's in the Starfinder guide where they mention that like the Starfinder Society was like founded at a certain time, and like they imply that it's modeled after the Pathfinder Society, which if it implies that the Starfinder Society isn't an evolution of the Pathfinder Society, then what happened to the Pathfinder Society and why is the Aspis Consortium still around and the Pathfinder Society isn't? It almost, to me, makes it sound like maybe Starfinder is a universe where it didn't have players to make sure that the Aspis Consortium didn't go unchecked, which I know this is me just speculating at this point, and don't confirm or deny anything I say, but like,
I think it's so interesting. In our group,
like
in the Star Chamber, we work really hard to kind of use our own toys rather than the Pathfinder toys. Like you'll often hear us talk about like connections between Pathfinder, Galarian, and our setting. We use those very sparingly and less often every year, I think. So we're more interested in making the Aspis Consortium a new and interesting Starfinder group than establishing any kind of connections, I think, with Galarian.
You know, I think that makes sense because the more connections you establish, the more you sort of pin yourselves into the idea of what the gap might have been or like things that happened during the gap. So if you want to keep that mystery, I think it's smart.
Maybe. But I also know that we kind of want to help to create Starfinder's own brand, right? I know that the game was originally pitched and is still often described as Pathfinder in Space. we kind of want to make it Starfinder in Space, not Pathfinder in Space, you know?
I think you've done that in a lot of ways. There's so many things that are unique to Starfinder that are just so Starfinder. That I think you've pretty successfully done it. And when it comes to call-outs like, hey, we're going to do the Aspis, it seems more like an homage than it is a tie-in. So I think that's really good.
Well, and you know, we've got people that, like, you know, Rob loves the Aspis Consortium, so he wants us to use them.
Of course. He's like, use them. He would.
Well, I mean, it'd have to be weird to want to ignore all that back matter. You know what I mean? Sure. Those are touchstones that people have to make connections.
For sure. We get around when we're brainstorming adventures. You know, we're like, okay, well, we'll start throwing out things from the IP that we know fans will recognize, right? Like I don't know how long we've been trying to find a way to use Hell Knights in Starfinder more. Like we want to put them in an adventure somewhere, right? Because people recognize Hell Knights and they look cool, right? Wait until you guys see the Hell Knight mech art. That's going to blow your mind.
Oh, right. I want it. Give me. I'm ready to enforce every law.
Yeah.
The law.
So that's just one example, but the Aspis is also one.
You know, like, I do enjoy Pathfinder, and I also enjoy the occasional connection between Pathfinder and Starfinder. So if you guys want to do more of them, I'm perfectly okay with that. You know, you could do as many connections as you want.
Let the record show that Alex is holding up a Kitsune doll.
The best connection that they do is that crossover organized play event every year.
Yeah, that's true. Right?
Where the Pathfinder Society and the Starfinder Society like cross over.
I don't know if that happens every year, but we're doing it more.
They do it. They've done it once.
They've done it, and then we're going to do it again probably. Yeah, so, you know, in addition to that, we're going to, you know, in that second volume, we're going to have a little more about, you know, maybe a little bit more about some Solarian stuff. But this one also sort of takes place sort of there's more land for you to explore, you know, some more mysteries to sort of uncover, some problems to deal with at home when some, you know, when someone's ex-wife shows up or something, you know, like with that. With your, because what we've done, what we're trying to do too, is like give you a ton of NPCs that you can to that are part of your original sort of settlers that you can sort of, if you want to, you know, be friends with them. And there's not like a system in that place, but, you know, just to, like, give GMs sort of a chance, like, here's a little bit of problem that they might have. The GMs can go, you know, oh, great, let's help that person out because they're really cool, or like, you know, whatever, I don't care about that person. And then GMs can be like, okay, well, they, you know, they go away and whatever. But the, you know, eventually, you know, this charter that they're running is going to have, you know, thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people, and we're not going to give you that many NPC names, but at least at the beginning here, the first couple volumes, you're going to get to know a lot about, like, oh, well, that's the, you know, that's our communications officer, there's our counselor, there's our chief science officer, there's our, you know, so forth and so on. Here are the two noir couple, that's a couple, you know, security guards, you know, that sort of give it a lot of hopefully a lot of personality. So one, and from there, and because we love No Direction Beyond so much, I'm gonna give you a bit of a scoop, and the other four titles for Horizons of the Vast. The third volume is called Whispers of the Eclipse. That one is written by the fabulous Kate Baker, and it is probably one of for this adventure path, it is the pulpiest. There's some maybe a hidden jungle valley, maybe there's some dinosaurs, maybe there's a lost moon colony. It's very it's pretty pulp. Without giving much too much more away, from there we go into fourth volume, which is called Icebound, which is written by Jake Tondro, will be written by Jake Tondro when he writes it. That is our ice level of the this particular adventure. There's actually a couple of different areas of cool frozen ideas that we've got. The first part is a little bit of a homage to a couple space horror movies in some fashion. Then the second part sort of brings back an old maybe not familiar to everyone who's played the game, but one of our larger antagonists. Why are they in the system? What are they doing here? Oh no. And while you go off to one of the this frozen gas giant that's off in the same system. So that's as we sort of go, you're allowed to, not allowed, but you can sort of take in a little bit away from the planet itself, because the third one has a little moon, and then the fourth one you head off into one of the other planets in the system, which isn't to say you obviously, if you know your GM wants you to go around, the other planets in the system are being kind of like explored and looked at, but there are also no other sentient. Like, that's something I wanted to sort of stress, actually take a step back and stress that this planet that you find and you start to sort of settle has no sentient life on it when you get there. It's completely unlived on. So it's not, it was sort of one of the things that was very important to sort of step away from, sort of like a colonizing kind of story, more or less, because, you know, space, there's not a great word for it anymore because we've never done it. Every time on the planet Earth someone has gone someplace else to start a new country, generally there's someone else already living there, like 9.99 times out of 10, right? But so us going to, say, like the moon or Mars and building a new nation or city or whatever doesn't really have a great name. We don't want to necessarily, it is, you know, people call it just colony in space, and the space colonist narrative is a very ingrained into science fiction narrative. Mm-hmm. But we want to sort of attempt to divorce it from any kind of like ugly historical roots that some of the words have. So that's why I sort of use the word charter. Also because we don't want to say, oh, you're a king. No, you're the administrators of this burgeoning settlement, right? And we try to use the word colony. We try to avoid the use word colonist. So
there's still a lot of animals and other, you know, native life. They're just, so there's a lot of creatures to encounter and problems to solve. But there's no one there's no civilization there.
Yeah.
No people there.
No people there, possibly anymore. You're gonna find some maybe hints that you know, hundreds of years ago something happened on here. Right. Someone used to live here. But for reasons which you will discover as you play the game, that they're not there anymore.
There's a couple
and that's the big mystery, basically. The big mystery of the AP.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple of interesting things about this AP, I think. One is the one that it takes a long time compared to other APs. Like, this is a campaign that could take years in the setting to play. Like, you have to, you know, you're building a nation. That doesn't happen in 2 weeks, right? So your characters will age, and there's a lot of opportunity there for interesting role play and story development as your characters get, you know, as the months and then years go by from the first adventure to the last. And I think that's, that creates some really interesting opportunity. And also, like Keely also already kind of hinted at, we're populating and describing all the planets in the system. Yeah. So there's like creatures with ecological, you know, like niches and stuff, like a whole ecology for all of these planets. And you won't go to all of them in the AP. At least the adventure doesn't take you there. But there's so much between having all this extra time and all of these extra plot hooks, we're really creating a huge stage for possible sort of side quests and other adventures that you could just play forever in this star system and pursue other adventures in, completely aside from the main plot of the actual adventure path. So it's really interesting.
Cool.
I do like the extended time frame of the adventure. When we played through Strange Aeons, that was over the course of what, like 4 months in game, and our signal screams is like 2 months tops.
The adventures often don't take very long because there's a pressing threat that you need to go handle, and you don't feel like it's
comfortable
taking a week off to craft something or, you know, craft several things, right?
So a lot of us I think we grew up on Hollywood time, you know, and we sort of feel like everything has to be compressed to try to ratchet up the suspense and the tension, you know, like, okay, they're gonna assassinate somebody tomorrow, we got to get, you know. But but this AP is different, and time is something that you can take. And I come from a lot of old role-playing games that love to have a lot of time pass. So I'm interested to see what players do.
You know, basically, a lot of times in Starfinder, the time that passes is all that time you're spending on your spaceship in the drift going from one adventure location to another, right? So we have all those downtime activities. And but the charter development system does sort of rely on those sort of downtime activities to say, oh, you need to spend a week managing the charter, basically, you know, answering emails and dealing with little minor problems and looking at spreadsheets and doing all that boring stuff that requires you to, you know, that requires for a settlement to work, or settlements or nation to work, right? So that's sort of built in. So yeah, it's sort of we want you to have your players can take their time, and you're gonna be traveling, and it's not necessarily going to be, despite it being the you know, the far future and technology being everything it is, you're on a planet that doesn't have roads and or sky, you know, grav trains and whatnot. It takes a while to get early, you know, and you want to, like, what's in that forest? Well, we're gonna have to survey the every square mile of that, and that takes a day or two, right? You know, for every 12 miles. So you know, time it takes time. To get back to the titles, because I still have two more. The fifth volume is called Allies Against the Eye. That's going to be written by Jabari Weathers, another sort of newcomer. They've written a few things for Pathfinder, and I wanted to give them a sort of tryout for Starfinder here. This one is, like, at this point, the PCs have kind of figured out a little bit what the major threat is, and this is the sort of talking to the other charters on the planet to sort of get their aid. Maybe some of them are more friendly than others, and some of them are a little more underhand. You know, you've got to make some concessions here and there, but also reach out beyond the system to the pack worlds and the Vescarium and deal with the whether or not you even want to sort of make those concessions to those individuals. Because while essentially the Pack Worlds and the Vescarium discovered the system in a sort of a joint scientific effort, the planet and all the charters were sort of sold off to corporations who then sort of hired people, corporations and larger organizations who then hired people to go. It's very much the difference between, you know, the way to sort of go back to some colonizing tropes, you know, England and the East India Trading Company, right? Like, it's sort of like that feel in a lot of ways. You get a patron who says, okay, we're going to buy all the buildings and ships for you to get there. But once you're there, you've got to start sending us money on a regular basis. So this is a profitable endeavor for us. But the system isn't part of the Pact Worlds or the Vescarium in of itself. Unless, you know, by the end of it, maybe you want to be. And that's sort of what the fifth volume sort of deals with. And then the sixth volume is called The Culling Shadow. And that is going to be by Landon Winkler. who's written another six. This is his second sixth volume climax. He wrote the final volume for Threefold Conspiracy. This one is basically sort of like, oh no, there may be a sort of invasion from without. There's some other force that you need to stop. I can't get into too many details without spoiling it, but you're going to be, it's going to have an epic kind of finale, I think.
Yeah. You spent all this time building up this huge nation. So now it's time to put it to the test, right?
Exactly. And it's not necessarily going to be a world war. It's going to be more like the world banding against this outside threat of evilness.
Very cool. It sounds like a very exciting series of titles.
Well, I was glad for it because we'd all thrown around an idea for Horizons of for a Kingmaker in space. Like I pitched one at the meeting that ultimately ended up doing Fly Free or Die. And everybody in the Star Chamber had their own idea of how we should finally do Kingmaker in space. But Keeley's the one that finally cracked it. He came up with the way to do it that we all recognized was the right way to do it.
Yeah, so. And it took a couple tries too, right? You know, from you and I talking a lot, I had another idea. It doesn't mean we won't ever do this in the first place, but I had this other idea that the adventure path is you are a nation, or you're part of a nation on a planet that has yet to sort of crack drift travel. So you're essentially playing it from the other way. Basically, you're playing it going outwards and then sort of getting ally, you know, talking to, oh wait, meeting a planet in your system for the very first time and saying, oh, let's ally with them. What do they need? Well, they need someone to solve this problem. So that was another idea that I had, but we ultimately decided to try to if we wanted that Kingmaker in space cachet, we'd have to do, you know, we wanted to do this hex crawl exploration of the planet and from there answering the questions of how do we do this without it being, you know, colonistic, right? And then okay, we have to check, you know, this is how you basically answer that, solve that problem first, and then from there figure out the story just kind of spools out from there.
Yeah, I mean it sounds like it's a really cool concept. I'm excited to see how it looks.
Me too. Because I haven't seen much of it in terms of, like, you know, art. And we're so far in advance of this one that I'm in the process of still, you know, working on that second adventure, which was just announced.
Yeah, this is the first adventure that's going to be part of the transition to bi-monthly for the Adventure Path line, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a good thing that the adventure is longer and takes time in in-game, because out of game it'll be longer and take time too.
Well, we found that people were taking a long time to get through the adventure paths, right? Like players were not using them as quickly as we were making them. So we could afford to take some time, and that, like I said earlier, that freed up the schedule to allow us to do some other kinds of adventures.
I'd say that, like, for James and my group, like, we typically get through the lower ones probably in like a month, maybe 2 months, depending on the lower level ones. But it usually takes much longer. Like, we're on like month 3 or 4 of the last book of Signal of Screams. Like, that one has definitely taken more time. So yeah, I think that's a good change, and I'm excited to see how it pans out for you. Looking at the clock, we have about a couple minutes left before we are signing out and our transmission ends. So do you two have anything you would like to shout out to before we close out for the evening?
Keely, anything you want?
You go first, Jake, because I had an hour to think about, an hour and a half to think about this.
Well, so I'm doing a developer diary for Fly Free or Die. If anyone's curious kind of how those adventures get made, and they're like hour long videos and podcasts on the Banff Network. So we'll get a link for you if you would like to listen to it. But basically I'm sort of going through every volume of that adventure path, sort of talking about what worked and what didn't, and kind of where my inspiration came from, and some of the challenges of individual encounters, and how I developed the entire adventure.
Cool.
And I'm doing that mostly for me, because I'm one of those guys that learns about things by sort of talking them out, you know, like I kind of have to talk it out loud to myself to figure out what I can take away. But that's an ongoing series. We've done two so far. We got third one coming up probably in a week or two. So check that out if you're interested. And, and if anyone's have questions or feedback on Fly Free or Die, just reach out to me on Twitter at Dr. Comics. I would love to chat with people. Some people have started. Oh, and the Player's Guide is out. We did not mention that. So for the first time, the Player's Guide for Fly Free or Die is a free PDF that you can download from the Paizo website. This is actually duplicating a chapter from the volume. So if you buy the adventure, you get the Player's Guide, but you can also download it for free. It's 8 pages. Mm. Chris Sims wrote it. And it's got specific sort of character backgrounds that you can pick for your character that tie you into the adventure, mm-hmm. give you a plot hook in. And also it's got two new themes, character themes, the Prole and the Vaster, which is kind of our version of the old Fringer from Star Wars. And it's a company catalog. It's a catalog for EdgeCorp that your employer at the beginning of the game. So it's got a bunch of working class first level gear that you'll find useful, and it's very appropriate for the space truckers vibe of this first adventure. It's got a whole little sidebar of like EdgeCorp slang, you know, and it's really great for role players because it's written in character as an in-world document. That EdgeCorp actually gives you, like, welcome to the Edge, you know, you're flying on the Edge, and then like this voice comes in and says like, okay, this Edge shit is all bullcrap, like don't listen to all that, and then somebody hacks into your catalog and starts giving you commentary. So it's really fun to read.
That is pretty sweet. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, take a look at it. Yeah.
As for me, I don't have much to plug at the moment. You know, keep an eye out for Junkers Delight, because obviously that's late next year, I would love to hear what people think about it and whether or not we sort of nailed the bringing in new people tone, right? And you know, if you've got any questions you want to ask me, you can also find me on Twitter at HerzWeston, HERZWESTEN, and you know, occasionally listen to me on Adventurous, why not? And now or go back and listen to Band of Bravos. There's 30 episodes of that. It's like 90 hours of content on YouTube, and I think on a podcast now. So listen to that and listen to me do my dumb bird voice. Because that was fun. And who knows what the future will bring in terms of that stuff. Hopefully I'll be a part of it. Hopefully I'll be a part of it. I don't know. And maybe we can get some Starfinder streaming up in that too.
Great. Vanessa, I know you have something you definitely want to shout out to, right?
I do, but my mic is making this sound.
Oh, that's a horrible sound. I'm going to say, Vanessa is hosting a new podcast called Super Smash Finder, and she is doing really great, and it's awesome. I've heard that it is super cool and super fun, so if you're into Pathfinder 2nd Edition and you want to see teams of people smash into each other like Super Smash Bros., you should definitely give a check out to her new podcast. It's a podcast, right? Yeah. I wasn't sure if it was considered an actual play or a podcast or an actual play podcast.
It's an actual play Twitch show and also releases a podcast.
Gotcha. Yeah.
James, I heard there was a lot of gravity well in that last episode.
James, do you have anything cool you want to shout out to?
What? No, I'm boring.
You're super not boring.
Yeah, but none of the stuff I do is for sale.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, well, thank you for joining us on No Direction Beyond. And as always, if you want to check us out, you can see us on Discord at, you know what? I don't remember the Discord handle, so you can just check us out at the link. And, I'm terrible. And we're here once a month on Wednesdays. And we also have our 2nd Edition sister show, which is No Direction Prime. Feel free to check us out on Wednesdays in this time slot, which is 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And until next time, go beyond with no direction.